Hello and welcome to Untouched, the podcast from the Centre for Visual Cultures at Royal Holloway, University of London. In this podcast series, we will be delving into the themes of touch, tangibility and intangibility in engagements with art on an everyday basis, on trips to galleries, in curatorial practice, in artistic creation and in academic research. We will be asking what it means to physically interact with visual culture, what we can get from non-visual engagements with art, how the pandemic has changed our approach to artistic interplay, and what happens when we encounter the intangible and the unknown.
Hello, I'm Carlotta Paltrinieri, and I'll be hosting today's episode of the podcast. I'm an active member of the CBC and a lecturer in early modern Italian studies in the Department of Languages, Literatures and Cultures at Royal Holloway. Today, I will be joined by two very special guests that I will introduce to you very shortly. But before doing that, let me tell you a little bit about the focus of today's episode, the benefits and, yes, the shortcomings of applying digital and computational methods to the study of visual culture and of the humanities. In a few words, we could define digital humanities as an approach or methodology developed in the last 30 to 40 years, which includes the systematic use of digital resources and the critical analysis of their applications to the humanities and our cultural heritage as a whole. This methodology enables researchers to ask questions that are difficult to explore with traditional methods. For example, due to the amount or complexity of material involved, and they also allow for a wider engagement of audiences outside of academia. Some of the more widespread examples of digital humanities and digital cultural heritage are building databases based on historical and archival documents, applying artificial intelligence to transcribe handwritten and printed text automatically, making digital reproductions of texts and objects that can be annotated, enriched with metadata, reconstructing archaeological sites and historical buildings via photogrammetry, virtual reality, augmented reality, and also through video games, gathering geospatial data to be mapped at large scale, and building social networks connecting people, objects, places, and other complex data in a prolonged period of time. Some of the greatest achievements of digital research for the humanities have been projects that reconstructed entire lost archives that are today widespread all over the world, that have shed light on the pivotal role of women in history, and that have uncovered the systematic use of racist and inappropriate language in catalog records of museums, archives, libraries, and other institutions. More recently, in addition to incredible innovations in the application of machine learning and computer vision to humanities big data, digital methods have been used to improve access and accessibility to our cultural heritage, both tangible and intangible, which is going to be the focal point of today's conversation. We will explore how digital methods can open up new research pathways that are more inclusive, accessible, and sustainable. And now, let me introduce you today's special guests, Hannah Thompson and Hannah Platz, Royal Holloway scholars who have worked extensively with digital resources and approaches. Welcome, Hannah and Hannah, and thank you so much for joining me. Could you please introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your research?
Okay, I'm Hannah Thompson and I'm in the Department of Languages, Literatures and Cultures. I'm particularly interested in critical disability studies and specifically how access innovations for disabled people in fact enhance experiences for all consumers of theatre, museums, and other kind of cultural media.
And I'm Hannah Platz, and I'm in the history department at Royal Holloway, and I'm a senior lecturer in ancient history and archaeology. But what I particularly am interested in is multi-sensory experiences of the past, and one aspect of that is thinking about how multi-sensory experience at historic and heritage sites can actually be used to sort of widen visitor access to the past and also help audiences think more about the visits and remember more about the visits they've had if you start bringing in extra sensory experiences within their visits.
Thank you both. And can you tell us how your research incorporates computational and digital methods, if at all?
So I am interested in how audio specifically can enhance experiences, whether on site, so you know, live in galleries or theatres, or accessed remotely, either before or after a performance or an experience of an exhibition. And so for me, it's the kind of possibilities of delivering audio files that digital offers, which is really interesting. So whether that's via a website or an app, whether it's on someone's own machine or whether it's accessed, you know, via a kind of infrastructure, it's the fact that digital gives really flexible access in terms of time, but also in terms of formats. So audio can also it can be transformed into text. It can be presented as a digital transcript, and as soon as anything is presented in a downloadable format, the user can change it to make it accessible to them. And so, it for me, digital gives a kind of a freedom and a flexibility to be able to access material in lots of different ways and in lots of different times and spaces.
Yeah, and I'd actually like to sort of agree very, very much with what Hannah was saying there. It is about the flexibility that digital offers. And I work very much on sound, but also on smell and olfactory experiences in heritage, specifically because, you know, smell has a very strong connection with memory. So if we're wanting people to think about their experience at a heritage site and remember it and take it away with them, it's thinking about, well, you know, how might smell and sort of recreating smells of the past, how might that be a way in which that experience of the past site or past era, how might bringing smell in, how might that sort of bring it to life, but also enable visitors to think more about it when they leave the site and remember it more. And so actually, as Hannah was saying about in terms of audio files and the delivery of that, what I've been doing is working with companies to think about how smell can be delivered to individuals as they visit heritage sites and museums, so that actually they can actually sort of immerse themselves not just through sight, not just through sound, but actually through the smells of the experience as well. And so that's where you know, computational sort of digital methods have really been crucial in my work for thinking about what smell might do to engage visitors further, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. So clearly you both have worked extensively with heritage collections. So I'm wondering if the recent digitization of collections and the digital turn in heritage collection, if this has benefited your research, or if you can tell us a little bit about how the sort of pandemic helped you with your research.
Yeah, so I guess the best example for me is Royal Holloway's Picture Gallery. And just before the pandemic, we started a project where we were creating user-led, co-created audio descriptions. So audio descriptions created by members of the college community. And the idea, the original idea was to record them and then have them available on an app, on the Smartify app, so that when people were in the gallery, they could access the content on their smartphones. The project was interrupted by the pandemic, but then we realized that the fact that the picture gallery exists also online meant that in fact the audio that we'd produced could in fact give a really enhanced access to the collection to the whole world, because you no longer needed to be in the gallery. The website had the flexibility to offer this audio described tour completely independently from the fact of being of geographically being in the gallery. So you could still have the experience of the gallery setting. You know, you could still listen to people talking about paintings, you could still see the paintings if you wanted to, but you could do that, you know, from anywhere with an internet connection 24 hours a day. And that is kind of, you know, I think one of the really important things about the pandemic is that it's shown us that you don't need necessarily to be physically in a space in order to appreciate the space. And that's really crucial for lots of people who don't, for whatever reason, whether it be physical access or financial access or geographical access, or cultural access, who don't have the kind of ability to be in a space. It's really opened up the way that heritage can be experienced. And I think the next step would be to kind of use the data we have from these experiences to work out how people access things and what works best. And I know that's something that Hannah's been, you know, the data collection side is something that Hannah's been working on much more.
Yeah, and actually, I think that's really interesting. I think one of the things that the digital as you say, the digital turn in the glam sector, it's also been really useful for not just thinking about visitor access and as Hannah quite rightly said, the idea of those visitors who can't access for whatever reason, and there are so many reasons, you know, geographical, financial, cultural, what have you. You know, there are a number of reasons why access to certain places is problematic. So that digital turn has really helped visitor access. I would also say it's helped researcher access as well. You know, and when you go now on to digitized, really well digitized collections as a researcher, I find it tremendously valuable myself, just so that I can, you know, I can actually go and visit the site, go and visit the item, but I can also have a look when I'm at home, when I'm in the office, so that actually it's not constantly about always having to get on a train to go down to wherever or what have you. And that can make a big difference in terms of just being able to check things over, just being able to confirm and see. And because every time I see a different artifact or a different site, I see it in a different way. There's always something I'm learning from it. So that ability with this sort of digital development that we've got, this development of real digital clarity and access, makes it much easier to then think about, well, how am I seeing this item? How am I seeing this artifact? How am I seeing it differently when I revisit it online and when I see it online? How can I bring that to bear in what I want to put across to visitors and to viewers and audiences? So I think it's really helpful for both visitor access, but actually researcher access as well. I think we really do benefit across the board. And I think what's also really interesting, Hannah made the point that I'm looking into quite a lot about the data. So thinking about you know, actually these digital experiences, one thing that I find really interesting is looking at the data and thinking about how are the visitors using or accessing, or what time are they spending on certain items, and what are they flicking through, and what are they interested in, and what are they not? And actually that data can actually be turned back and sent back to and used by institutions, by heritage sites, by museums, in a way that actually they can then learn from their visitors as to what their visitors are finding useful or not finding useful, not engaging with. And in that sense, there's a real potential there for using this digitization and the materials, the information we get from digitization to really make heritage that much more vibrant for everyone.
Thank you both for the very rich answers. And on this note, could you tell us a little bit about the Multisensory Museums and New Modes of Access project in which you collaborated in 2018, especially if there's anything you would have done differently if it were a post-pandemic project?
Yeah, I mean, it was a small project, and the idea was to try and work out or try and prove that visitors who are given information or experiences in different sensory modes have a deeper engagement with an art object. And we chose one of the objects we chose was the famous polar bear picture in the picture gallery, and we created a kind of multisensory experience involving touch and kind of sensation. So, you know, we kind of created some cold wind, and we used smells of the kind of rotting flesh and the kind of the icy conditions, and we had sounds of like polar bears, and then we also had a description, and we kind of compared how people felt whether or not they heard that they were exposed to the whole experience, or whether they just didn't look, and unsurprisingly, you know, people were much more engaged. But I think, I mean, it wasn't we didn't make the most of the digital in that experience. That the, you know, we used digital for the audio track, but it was also very in person, and kind of, you know, there were things to touch, there were things to play with. And obviously the kind of hygiene issues around that are really exercising museums at the moment would now make that impossible, I think. So I think, and you had to kind of be in the space. So I think now we're realizing the potential of digital to access remotely. As you know, we need to explore that. So whenever there's an experience offered, it needs to have a kind of remote equivalent, or a kind of online equivalent. Because if you only offer in person experiences, you're really limiting the kinds of people and the number of people who can travel to that experience.
Yeah, I think that's, Hannah, you've made some really important points there. And I think that's something that it was a really exciting, very small project, but it really took me and my research in interesting ways, because actually the notion of being in the space to experience it and to experience the multisensory is something I've been working with on my recent project called Tudors Augmented, where actually what we very specifically have done is developed an online an augmented reality app that delivers sound, sight and smell. It works in the museum, but there's also a remote version that you can play at home as well. So it's very much about trying to bridge that gap of making sure you don't have to be there, because actually that was, as Hannah said quite rightly about the Multisensory Museums and New Mode of Access project that we worked on together, that was about being there. It was, you know, the touch of the the touch of the items, the smell wasn't delivered digitally. It was only the sound delivered digitally. So I think now it's very much about thinking, we're learning so much more about what's possible with digital. So now it's thinking about, right, what can be done both on site and remotely is now how I see the building blocks of this project that we can think about taking further.
Thank you, Hannah. And since you mentioned your Tutors Augmented project, which it's my understanding built on your previous work with virtual reality, such as the Sensation of Roman Life project, could you tell us a little bit about how this multisensory experience offered by virtual reality and augmented reality, how does this experience impact engagement and in what ways?
Yeah, absolutely. So it started with a project I was working on called, as you say, it was a virtual reality project. It was called Sensations of Roman Life. And we recreated a Roman house from Silchester. And actually what's really interesting is the house no longer stands at all. Literally, if you go to the place where it stood, it is just a random old field. But underneath all that, there is this really amazing excavational history, but no one knows about it unless you're an archaeologist or what have you, you know, unless you really know the site. So what we wanted to do was bring that to life. But then actually what we wanted to do was think about, well, how does smell impact and sound impact a visitor's understanding? So we built this house in virtual reality. And what we did was to make it an inclusive experience in terms of families being able to experience it together and not having to put on headsets and experience the house in isolation from each other. We actually displayed it all on a big screen so that actually families could go through and experience it all together and they could play around together as family groups. And I think that was really important because they a lot of families were sort of testing each other and you know, that was really interesting. And so we asked them about their experience of the virtual reality sensations of Roman life. And what was really interesting was that not only did they hear the sounds and see and smell the cesspits or smell the fires or smell the cooking meat, but as they approached the fire, because they could hear the fire, because they could smell the fire, they interestingly were saying, oh, I feel much warmer. Oh my word, I can feel the fire. Now, weirdly, we hadn't put any haptic sensations, any feel of temperature in the game. But a lot of our visitors really felt that they could experience. So they were being drawn in because there was more than one sensation that they were experiencing. It got them to start imagining and thinking about other sensations, which I found really interesting as a researcher. So moving on then, recently, I've just completed a project called Tutors Augmented, where we have developed an augmented reality app for mobile phones, which has sound and sight and smell. And as you go around the Mary Rose Museum, you wear a backpack with an individual scent device, and it releases certain smells at certain points throughout the trail-based game that you're playing on the app. So when you're asked to fire the cannon in the app, gunpowder, the smell of gunpowder is released, and things like that. And what's really interesting, when we've had feedback from our visitors, they just constantly are saying, you know, the smell just really has drawn them in to the story that we're trying to get them to think about. So I would say that actually it's really been a way in which visitors have been infused. But I suppose the other side of it is where we've had visitors with maybe some sensory impairment, or where certainly with our Sensations of Roman Life, we had a number of visitors with ASD or ADHD. And actually what was really important, both in the Sensations of Roman Life experience and within our Tutors Augmented experience, is you can turn off and on certain experiences. So if you feel uncomfortable with sound, you could turn that off. If you felt uncomfortable with smell, you could turn that off. So in that sense, it was giving audiences agency as to what they wanted to and felt comfortable with experiencing. And I think that really was an incredibly useful thing for us to understand and actually for us to experience with our visitors to these experiences.
Yeah, that's so important, Hannah, this idea that not all visitors want everything in terms of an experience. You know, there's a real tendency to give as much as is possible to everyone in terms of, especially in terms of VR and AR. You know, if it's technically possible, let's have it. But actually, one of the brilliant things about digital is the choice and agency it gives, or it is possible to give people. So you could, you know, the first step could be each user customizing their experience. You know, and some people, everyone has a different relationship with the senses. You know, some people really, really like looking at things. Other people find that they need some kind of audio prompt to help them look at things. Other people really respond to music or to scent. And it's about kind of, you know, digital is it really gives flexibility. And especially if that's built in early, it means that you're kind of embedding access into everything you do so that everyone can have an equivalent experience and they're in charge of determining what that experience is.
Well, then that sounds fantastic. Thank you so much. And so speaking of, you know, agency and engagement and multisensory, this is a question for Hannah Thompson. So you mentioned your work with the picture gallery at Royal Holloway, but you're currently working with the Wellcome Collection, the Science Museum as well, to add digital audio content to exhibitions. So could you share with us what you consider to be the greatest achievements of this project so far? Was there anything that surprised you?
Well, so the Wellcome Collection are kind of the leaders in accessible exhibition design in the UK, and their Being Human exhibition is a really good example of an exhibition which is kind of embedded access right from the start, and they wanted to push this even further because, you know, it's still not perfect and there's, you know, everyone can do more. So there are three exhibitions that they're currently planning, and they decided they wanted to embed audio description in the design of the exhibitions and have it as an access tool, but also really promote it as a great experience for everyone. So it's what I call blindness gain, which is this idea that something which starts as a very niche access offer, you know, audio description, becomes an integrated part of the exhibition as a whole. And the most interesting thing that's happening, one of the exhibitions is called In Plain Sight, and it's about vision. Okay, and what's happened is that the exhibition, because of my interest in audio description and because of their acknowledgement that you know everyone sees differently, the exhibition has become really a lot about non-normative ways of seeing or not seeing. So there are lots of blind artists and kind of some, it's really interesting. And the audio description tracks that we're creating are almost, they're almost going to be an exhibit themselves, because they're a kind of an example of how audio can enhance experience, and so the whole exhibition has now become really about getting people to question what they think about sight and showing that there are lots of non-visual ways of engaging with museum content. So it's kind of quite a self-reflexive exhibition, and it's been really fascinating to kind of, you know, write the audio A lot of the audio has been written by the artists themselves, but also by users. We've kind of co-created it using lots of different voices. And we're instead of basically presenting it as a neutral kind of this is what's there, we're really emphasizing the fact that everyone sees differently. And so every audio description, every voice has a different take. You know, if Hannah and I and you, Carlotta, were standing in front of a picture, we would all notice different things. And that you know, emphasizes the fact that there are as many ways of seeing as there are people. And so why not have that multiplicity and that plurality in exhibition interpretation itself? So that's kind of what I've been exploring. And it's going to be a really great exhibition.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us your projects and your expertise. And now a few final questions. I think a little bit more personal, maybe. So first thing I want to ask is, what is your favorite piece of visual culture that you have encountered during the pandemic? And how were you able to access it?
Wow, that's such a difficult question. I really like the work that the Photographers Gallery does in London, specifically because whenever they have an exhibition, they also have something that they call slow looking, and it's a kind of very detailed description of a piece, a photograph from the exhibition, by a professional audio describer. For everyone, so it's basically a chance to spend a lot of time with one work, and that's something that doesn't normally happen in art galleries. I think, is it something like most people spend like 2 seconds in front of each work of art or something, whereas you know a slow looking experience can take kind of you know half an hour. And it really changes the way that you relate to galleries, and to exhibitions and to exhibits, and to objects, because you kind of, it's kind of almost like a meditation. It's very detailed, and it's very, it kind of gives you the time. It allows you to kind of spend a really long moment with something, and this was all delivered digitally during the pandemic, and continues to be actually, because I think a lot of you know galleries have realized that their numbers of people engaging with tours went up massively when they were offered digitally rather than in person, for the reasons we've discussed. So the work at the Photographers Gallery is the thing that really transformed the pandemic for me.
I think for me, it's not really pandemic. I mean, it's something I've seen recently. So it's sort of at the end of the pandemic. Well, I don't know. Are we at the end of the pandemic? Mm. I'm not really sure how to answer what stage we are in with the pandemic, actually. But I went to an exhibition at the Western Library in Oxford called Sensational Books. And I just really enjoyed the idea of how we think about reading and how we experience reading, but actually how there's so much more than just sight when we read a book and when we experience a book. So it was very much about thinking about the experiences of the book beyond just sight. So it was structured around sight, but sound and smell and taste and touch. And thinking about how you relate to the book, how you, your notion of your own perception of yourself with the book as you're reading. And I just found that really interesting, purely because for me, when the Kindle or ebooks sort of came out, I tried a Kindle and it just didn't work for me. I had no interest. I read maybe one or two books on my Kindle and then I've put it away, and it's never been brought back out of the cupboard, because actually I love to hold the book. I love the opening of a new book. I love the feel of the pages, the weight of the pages, you know, the smell of a new book or the smell of an old book. And actually, so that experience of sensational books. First of all, it was quite nice that other people are like me and think about the sensory book. And for me, I that just made me think we're so often reliant on the concept of reading as being visual, but actually our experiences with books are so much more than just visual. And so it was really great. And within that experience, within that exhibition, there were sound artists, there were, as I say, there were tactile displays, there was a smell wall that actually you could sort of really think about the book and the different aspects of literary culture and book culture in a variety of ways. And for me, that was fantastic. The way I had to see it was, I was in Oxford. It is only accessible by being in the space. That having been said, it was free to access, so there wasn't a financial challenge to getting to see it. But I think it would be very interesting, and I've looked online to see if I can buy a sort of guide to the exhibition. And unfortunately, at the minute, there doesn't seem to be one. But that in itself is really interesting, because if you buy a guide to the sensational book, what you're buying is the book of it. So actually, for me, that I can completely see why there isn't a guide, although I would love to have a guide of the exhibition. But yeah, I think that's probably the best thing. But it's sort of at the tail end of the pandemic. But in that sense, it's been. It was so lovely to have other people in the museum as well, and to have people being able to experience the museum and the museum setting, to start getting back into museums. And I think that actually has been really important. You know, a really important thing that I've been thinking about, particularly for when I teach, I take my students to the British Museum to look at Roman art and bits of architecture. And actually, during the pandemic, when we couldn't take our students to museums, that was a real gap by not being able to go. So I think the big thing for me has been able to get just back into museums and supplement the digital with the actual being there in person.
Can I just jump in and say something about the book exhibition, Hannah? I haven't been yet. It's on till, I think it's on till December.
Yes, it is.
But I do know that they are doing audio descriptive tours of it at least once a month between now and December, because that's why I haven't been yet, because I need to put myself onto one of the audio described tours. Yeah. And I just thought it was really fascinating what you said about the Kindle and the tactile nature of reading, because the Kindle completely changed. Well, Kindle and Audible have completely changed my approach to reading. Mm. I also, you know, I love books, but the thing about books, physical books, is that they have quite small print.
Yeah.
And for me, so if I want to read a book, I have to wear like a huge magnifier on my face, and it, you know, I have to hold the book really close. And the Kindle meant that I could comfortably read in public again. Mm-hmm. So I think I've probably read like 1,000 books on my Kindle since I got it. So I kind of miss the you know, I always have physical books as well. It's interesting, isn't it, that there is this kind of real tactility about reading, but the book itself, the fact it's tactile, you know, the fact it looks like it looks, makes it inaccessible. So yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
it's fascinating, and you know, that is the thing. That I mean, my father-in-law loves his Kindle. He loves it. And so his house, they got not many tangible books, but he's got all his books on his Kindle and he loves it. But for me, it was just a real disconnect. And so, yeah, I find it really interesting.
I think it's very interesting to hear that we do have to factor in different experiences, individual experiences in you know, in approaching these objects. And then, so I guess the digital, that's the new role, that's the new frontier. How the digital can help in this catering, this tailored experience. And now, very, very briefly, I think the last burning questions for both of you. Is there anything that you'd like to promote or make our listeners aware of with regards to your work and research?
Well, it's not really so much about my work. It's tangentially related to my work. It's the Smartify app. I just think that everyone needs to download the Smartify app onto their phone because it's like the Shazam of museums and art galleries. And so what happens is you download this app and then you go into a museum or a gallery or a shop or someone's house and you see a picture and you like it. So you scan it, you know, as if you were scanning a QR code. And if it's in either Smartify's database or on Wikipedia, it'll tell you the artist, the name, you know, all the information you need about the painting. And if the gallery has decided to, they can add further information and or audio files. I've just discovered that my local museum has signed up to Smartify, so I'm going to go and investigate that. But you know, if you're in London and you pop into the National Gallery and you see a picture, you just scan it and it tells you what it is. I think it's genius. I just think everyone should use it.
And I would just like to actually echo that. Smartify app is brilliant. I've done a little bit of work with Smartify on other projects, and not with audio description at all or anything like that. But the Smartify app is absolutely fantastic. It really is great. So I would just echo very much what Hannah says on that one. I suppose the thing I would like to say is that my project that I've been working on, the augmented reality app, it's the world's first ever multi-sensory augmented reality game that you can download on your phone. It's called Time Detectives, The Mystery of the Mary Rose. And you can download it on your phone for $4.99. And you can download it from the iOS App Store or the Google Play Store. And you can play in the museum and you have access to scent and sound and smell, smell, sound and sight. And you can also play it remotely at home where you won't have access to smell, but you will have the sounds and sights of life on the Mary Rose and the mystery of why and how the Mary Rose sank. So I guess that's the other plug I would say that's connected with my work particularly.
Well, thank you so much. I'll check them out for sure. Well, our time is up. So thank you so much for joining our Untouched podcast. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. So thank you so much again, Hannah and Hannah.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Untouched. All the information you need to find out more about us, the Centre for Visual Cultures, is linked in the episode notes. If you have any thoughts or questions on what we've discussed today, email us at centreforvisualcultures@rhul.ac.uk. or tweet us at @RHUL_CVC. This podcast is produced by the Royal Holloway Centre for Visual Cultures, located in the Languages, Literatures and Cultures Department at Royal Holloway. Edited by myself, Anna, with music by Gaspar Senna. See you next time.